Hi, and welcome to Forest for the Future, the podcast series where we talk about innovations and trends and grand ideas in the world of sustainable forestry, climate mitigation, and, of course, FSC. Today we have an exciting episode focusing on FSC's work and strategy to increase the use of TIS-based technologies. I am joined by Scott McQueen, who's the Senior Technology Officer at FSC International. And Scott will tell us much more about what we are doing on GIS right now and what the outcomes of 2025 are. So there's a lot on the table. Let's just dive straight in. Hi, Scott. Welcome back to the podcast. Let's just dive right in. I know you've been working on an updated strategy for increasing the use of GIS-based technologies in FSC. Can you share a bit more about that?
Yes. Over the last 2-3 years, we've made big strides with implementing GIS here at FSC. GIS, Geographic Information Systems, is a critical analysis tool, communication tool for what we're doing with our FSC Forest Stewardship and beyond. So we have been successful in implementing a infrastructure that will allow us to start opening up that GIS functionality to FSC employees, staff, and our network partners and beyond, including our certificate holders as we continue to mature. That said, that means we're forever iterating on creating a new plan, what we're doing year to year. And we go through that process every fall, early winter with our partners, Esri. And I just came out of workshops in Bonn, where Esri came and participated in those workshops so we could create a strategy for 2025. And I'm really excited about the work plan that we have developed with them.
Okay. So there are two follow-up questions for that. The partnership with Esri, we haven't heard about that before. Can you just elaborate a bit more about what is that partnership and what does it mean for FSC?
So I joined FSC 3.5 years or so ago, and almost immediately, we assessed our licensing, our software licensing that we had with Esri, and we approached Esri corporate based down in California here in the USA and spoke directly with Jack Dangerman, the owner of the company, and said, hey, we're a nonprofit. We're focused on protecting the forests of our planet and also making sure that forestry is achieved in a sustainable fashion. Jack was very much interested in what we were trying to do and put some resources behind that, which included software licensing that was valued at almost $2 million. Plus, we have a support package from them as well that we look at every year. So the partnership has gone from 3 software licensing, much reduced. And let's see what you can do. So we've been delivering on that. And the partnership continues to produce good outcomes for both FSC and Esri is really impressed as well.
What's in it for them? What's in it for Esri? Why would they invest in FSC?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Esri, unlike most software companies, is a privately held company. It's held by Jack and Laura Dangerman. They are the sole owners of it. So if you do that, you can do whatever you want. Jack is passionate about conservation, and he's passionate about the world's forests and the protection of those forests, but he also understands the importance of forestry, especially sustainable forestry, and its role in protecting the forests. So Jack and his wife Laura have given the Nature Conservancy one of the biggest gifts that the Nature Conservancy has ever received. So again, this is a passion project for him. Jack understands the importance of the Forest Stewardship Council, and I truly believe that he just wants to help us achieve our mission and of becoming a data-driven organization.
Interesting. So you told us that you just met with Esri in Bonn in our main offices last week to look at the 2025 strategy and work plan. Can you give a sneak peek into what is it that we will be focusing on?
Up until this point, I mentioned, you know, that we've been working on this since I joined, you know, 3.5 years ago. We have our core infrastructure, GIS infrastructure in place. We have our data system set up. We have mapping portals set up. We have all of this stuff. We've started delivering on things. This last session, we've had these planning sessions once a year with Esri. They come, we figure out what we're going to do for the following year. It's always been focused internally, meaning on our technology and information unit. Like, how do we get this infrastructure, this platform stood up? How do we get capacity built within FSC to do these things? This year, for the first time, we invited other members of FSC, from our performance and standards unit to our monitoring and evaluation unit to our climate ecosystem services unit. They all came into this planning session. We discussed their needs as downstream users of GIS, if you will, what kind of analysis needs they might have. It's really interesting as our climate ecosystem services program really starts to get off the ground. They will be heavy users of GIS, so it was really a good time to bring them in and talk about what they would be doing as downstream users. Our performance and standards unit, also somebody else kind of downstream. How are we demonstrating impact in our forest? What sorts of things are we going to need to develop information products around, even like the EUDR work that we're doing? What sort of downstream products will we be delivering? What would they need? Our measurement and evaluation unit, talking about forest degradation. How are we demonstrating impact? How are we staying on top of how our standards are performing? All those sorts of things. So it was really fascinating time. And out of that, we start pushing out GIS capacity into our different units within FSC. That, for me, was a very gratifying session. We weren't talking just about databases and computing power and structures and all of those things that are very critical. We start talking about pushing this GIS capability out into FSC. And in my opinion, it's one of the most important steps that we can take to help FSC become a data-driven organization, which is a big deal. FSC has been very successful as a procedure-based organization. But in that process, we're in a new world from when FSC started. We're in this world now where the customer expects data. They need to be able to demonstrate how well they're doing through implementing FSC standards. They need to generate maps. They need to be able to prove that all of their good intentions with getting their forest certified is actually having a net gain in saving our world's forests.
I can't help but wonder, in that vein, you said that this year was the first time that we invited other internal stakeholders into that planning session. Do you imagine a point in the future where it wouldn't just be FSC staff, but it would also be representative of our actual users who would be part of such a planning session or part of preparing for such a planning session, where we get more market informed and get informed from the outside of just the internal FSC units, basically?
Lola, that is an awesome question. It actually brings me to what I would consider the end goal being with GIS within FSC, and that is providing value to our certificate holders in generating their own maps. We're nibbling at the edge of that with things like the risk hub that we're standing up for EUDR with information products like our forest degradation risk product. We developed a model using remote sensing. But ultimately, yeah, it's important that FSCs start to internalize a very powerful tool like GIS. But ultimately, we need to move again closer to the certificate holder. FSC, I mentioned the standards that we have put out. We've got these great standards, these great procedures around sustainable forestry. And we have all of these wonderful partners like our certification bodies, our network partners. But because we've got all of this stuff, it's kind of moved a little bit away from our certificate holders. I truly believe that through GIS, we can come back closer to those certificate holders and provide them more direct value than just our awesome standards and procedures.
But do you then see them being part of informing what those awesome products that they need are?
Absolutely. It's my fondest hope that we can do that sooner rather than later. I think, and using EUDR as kind of an example, for those of you who may not know, European Union deforestation regulation has been kind of this catalyst event within FSC as we scramble trying to help our certificate holders respond to this and conform to it. It has pushed us in a lot of different ways to also acknowledge that we need to do a better job of understanding the market needs. FSC, through this EUDR process, we created an early adopter program where we have several certificate holders that are engaged to help guide us in making sure we're not missing the market needs and connecting. But that same sort of, it's again, that's just the very beginning piece of what FSC, I hope, is going to do more of. I can imagine that an early adopter program also helps advise us on how we push out this GIS information, this data, these capabilities, these mapping capabilities, these analysis capabilities out to our certificate holders. And so my hope is that early adopter program that we created as part of our response to EUDR will carry on and become a core component of how FSC operates, which again is moving closer to our certificate holders.
Mm. So if we just pivot back to what are those tangible outcomes from 2025 and the work plan that you're working on, can we get a bit more specific? So you had the workshop, you now know what you're going to do, or more or less know what you're going to do for next year. Do we know what we're going to do, basically, on GIS? What will the world be able to see?
We definitely know what we're going to do. Again, we're still kind of focused internally. But The beauty of that is we will, one of the main components is building up a larger data repository, which will include information derived in a variety of ways through remote sensing products. When I say remote sensing, we're normally talking about satellite imagery. But it will also include mapping capabilities for internal to FSC, so they can generate maps on, say, carbon and carbon opportunity for our Climate Ecosystem Services program, biodiversity potential, all those sorts of things from a CES perspective, how we're demonstrating impact of forest certification. These are all information products that I can imagine our certificate holders could get a lot of value out of as well. Now, I'm going to go back. It's been several months ago. We had a podcast where we talked a bit about this idea of the Forest Atlas. The Forest Atlas at that point was a concept about a place where we could store this GIS information, where we could also store the analysis capabilities, the mapping capabilities for access. By at that time, we thought about, is this internal to FSC or do we open this up out into our ultimate customers, which are the certificate holders? So the Forest Atlas continues to evolve from, you know, this concept to more of a, again, a repository, a place that our certificate holders can access. And the idea, again, continues to evolve. But right now, we're developing all of this work around the European Union Deforestation Regulation. The Risk Hub is part of that. The risk of forest degradation, that's an information part of that. Motion 61 is essentially a GIS requirement that our certificate holders upload their forest boundaries. Those forest boundaries are a core data set that will help us start to determine, again, impact, ecosystem services, potential, a variety of things that will come out of that core information. So back to the Forest Atlas, I can imagine that because of the work we're doing with our internal programs, we're going to develop all these information products, all this data, and a good portion of that will ultimately find its way into the Forest Atlas for use by our certificate holders.
Do you imagine that being behind a login, or is that like more of an open source thing that we actually essentially use, say, certificate holders, but in reality, it's something that we would provide to the world? Have you had discussions about that?
I think it's a combination of things. There will obviously, we will always have public-facing maps and public-facing information, but certainly there will be login. Part of the gift from Esri around licensing allows us to serve out GIS functionality to certificate holders, our customers again. So every certificate holder will ultimately have their own login into our GIS infrastructure. That will, again, I keep using the general idea of putting together maps and generating maps for use, but that's essentially, you will have the ability to do that. So I mentioned Motion 61, which is a requirement that all certificate holders must upload and submit their boundaries of their certified areas. Through that process of uploading and submitting those GIS layers to FSC, you will be assigned a login, which will give you a secure access to not only your boundary data, which you've uploaded, but all of this other data. And I mean, I can imagine it being interesting to a certificate holder that they would be able to log in to their own little GIS portal, make sure that let's say their certified area boundary changes, they can update that. But then they could also take that boundary and lay it over carbon potential, ecosystem services potential. So they can start to look at their forest in a way that helps them as well.
Mm. Can I just rewind us there a bit? Because I'm just worried that people will start thinking, wow, I'm a certificate holder. I'm a producer way down the line. That would mean that I, for my supply chain, would be able to do X, Y, Z. When we're talking about certificate holders and Motion 61, which is essentially a decision that came out of our General Assembly, the last one that we had, we're talking about the forest management certificate holders uploading the shape of their forest, and they are the ones who would be having access to these data layers.
That is correct. Yeah, and thank you for that clarification. Obviously, our forest management certificate holders is the focus for what we're doing with GIS, and understanding the where component of those forests is a big piece of it. And so just to go back to Motion 61, it does apply only, honestly, to the forest management companies that are out there. And we have already released the MVP on Motion 61. We invited 100 forest management certificate holders to come in and submit as kind of a trial. Version 1 is coming out, I'm going to say, hopefully by the end of November. It's still all voluntary at this point. We still have to release an advice note, which we imagine will be in April. But the point of the matter is, starting with our version 1 of the forest area submittal tool, forest management certificate holders will be able to upload and start to interact with essentially the beginnings of the forest atlas.
Mm-hmm. And why is it that it's so important for us to have those forest boundaries, those shape files from the certified forest owners? What will that enable us to do?
Oh, boy. So, you know, I'm a geographer. When I first came to FSC, I was kind of amazed that we didn't understand completely and couldn't demonstrate where all of our certified lands were. We knew how many hectares, we knew roughly how many acres by country, those sorts of things. But we could not point to a map and say, here's where all of our forests are. And once you understand the where and you have the GIS behind it, that allows you to see other things. It allows you to, again, demonstrate impact. So how do we even know that forest certification has an impact on sustainability? Well, you have to be able to prove that in a data-driven fashion. So through that core information of knowing the geographic boundaries, we can start to see things like geopolitical risk around that. We can start to see things like cumulative effect of development pushing on those forests. We can start to understand, again, I mentioned the ecosystem services opportunity. You have to have that boundary, the ring, the polygon of where that certified area is before you can start answering all of those questions. Otherwise, you're just kind of, in my mind, guessing on things like impact and ecosystem services opportunity.
And what are the, so you mentioned that we are now pushing out a version 1, which is voluntary. What's the implications for a forest owner if they choose to upload their shape file? Like, what are the choices that they have in that process? Is that They upload a shapefile and now everybody in the world can see where their forests are. Or which kind of power do they have over this data if they choose to contribute it?
So a forest owner will come in to the portal, open up the boundary submittal tool. Mm-hmm. They will upload their shapefile. And through that process, they will be able to say, do you want to share this publicly or not? And if not, then it's private only to FSC internally. FSC can't share it external to FSC. And they, as a certificate holder, can then see their boundary. So once they upload it, they trigger, is this publicly shareable or not? If so, then, I mean, if it is publicly shareable, FSC will display it on a map that will be accessed through our main FSC.org website. If not, only the certificate holder will be able to see it, as well as FSC staff that are starting to look at that, look at deeper into the where aspects of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about ASI and certification bodies, et cetera?
Well, the CB role in this has not been completely, I guess, ironed out, because this was one of the very interesting questions early on, which is, all right, I'm a certificate holder, but my CB does all of the mapping for me. So mm-hmm. as a certificate holder, I don't want to come in and upload it. I want to designate my CB to be the one that comes in and uploads it. And so you can do that through the system as well. So, but as a certificate holder, you have to log in and assign that privilege to your CB or some other entity who may not be you, might be a forest manager, whatever.
You said earlier that that one of the benefits for forest owners was that if they choose to use this platform, they get an S3 license. What can they do anything beyond just uploading their boundary data with that S3 license? Are we planning like motivational tools almost, I would say, that are part of this?
That license allows them access to the Forest Atlas. In the Forest Atlas, you will have some of these information products. I keep talking about ecosystem services because that is an obvious area of growth for FSC. You would be able to assess the potential for ecosystem services within your boundary. You might be able to make maps. And I also know that some of the other upcoming applications that we will be developing and releasing through the Forest Atlas will be things like FM Online. Right now, we are using our, you know, I think it's called the Digital Audit Report, which is a big old spreadsheet. Part of what we're looking at is creating mobile applications that will be used on your phone for doing your forest management. Essentially, what the Digital Audit Report is about, that would be submitted through there as well. So we will continue to grow and create functionality that we hope that the certificate holders can use. But to that point, one of the things, again, I keep going back to EUDR that we learned mm-hmm. through this process of EUDR is that we need to become closer to our certificate holders and the needs of our certificate holders. And I mentioned the early adopter program and getting feedback from our certificate holders of things that they want or need within that Forest Atlas is one of the critical feedback loops that we're in the process of creating. So again, as a technologist, as a geographer, I can sit here and imagine all kinds of things that could have impact for our forest management certificate holders. But honestly, we need to hear from our FM certificate holders and help them with their needs, not create tools that don't have any application.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. You've mentioned EUDR quite a number of times now. I'm wondering whether we should just be a bit more specific, because you also just in a by sentence said, oh, and then there's the Risk Hub. Can we maybe put a few more words to what the Risk Hub is and how that connects to EUDR and put maybe also sort of try and pan it out and say, how would such a tool connect to other legislations that might be coming up out there?
Oh, well, there's a lot to unpack there, Loa.
What is it?
Yeah, so the Risk Hub, I think, it has, as all things, anytime you put a name on it, it starts meaning different things to different mm-hmm. people. And I've been leading the Risk Hub response. It's essentially, as part of the UDR, you must do a risk assessment to create a due diligence report. The risk assessment must look at primarily the risk of degradation in your area, or there's a variety of parameters. I think right now we have like 64 different risk parameters that are being assessed. There's two pieces to the risk hub. The first one is the FSC-led risk assessments that are currently out. We've got several countries that we've hired consultants to go out and do these risk assessments. Romania was the first one to come back. Anyway, we're starting to upload this information country by country and start to get an understanding of risk through those assessments. Another piece of the risk hub is the certificate holder-led risk assessment. And the important part of that is that the certificate holder also has to look at risk within their area of harvest. And if there is risk, they need to create mitigating actions and create a report that's basically submitted as part of their trade within the European Union. All of that, if you can imagine, is GIS-based. Risk is a very geographic thing, primarily. And I'm saying this, I'm a geographer, so I'm biased in this way. Understanding the geopolitical risk of a country, understanding what's going on around the forest harvest, roads, all of those sorts of things are all elements of risk. So to truly analyze that in a good fashion, you need GIS information. We're also creating a risk dashboard. Well, we have already created a risk dashboard that is going through its initial testing. Pretty sure it's public. It will allow a user to come in and log in and look country by country globally at all of these different risk elements. I mentioned geopolitical risk. There's a whole, like I said, 64. There's also the risk of degradation, forest degradation. And I can imagine that this is one of the first times, again, the FSC is trying to really truly be data-driven and using remote sensing modeling to look at the risk of degradation. And just because this information map about forest degradation risk shows a country as having degradation risk doesn't mean that those forests are degraded. It just means it has the potential that they could be degraded, and you're going to have to mitigate that. Anyway, all of that aside, all of those products are intended to be used by our customers. And again, very much GIS-centric, very much, again, built on the foundation of GIS on our Forest Atlas that we have here at FSC.
And I think for me, the beauty of that, just moving it a bit or taking it a bit further, is that we then plan to integrate that or are integrating that with FSC Trace, our blockchain-based platform, so that we don't not only enable the data to travel between those two platforms, but actually also to travel between supply chain links, so travel between different companies. And that for me is where the real power of this, that you get the risk assessment directly from the forest area, from the forest owner, but it can then afterwards travel between players within a given supply chain.
Absolutely. And knowing that journey that log took from the forest to the marketplace is a really important thing. It excites me. Again, it's becoming more data driven. And that's, in my opinion, it's the next huge leap that FSC is attempting, which is let's become a data driven organization, a data driven culture. Process and procedures are excellent, but we also have to continue to provide value to our certificate holders. And that value is done through data and demonstrating that data in a way that helps strengthen the FSC brand and our certificate holders' brand.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of trying, again, to make it a bit more tangible for the listeners of this Forest Atlas, how far is that still on a conceptual phase, or is it being developed? What's the status of that tool?
Yeah, so the Forest Atlas, again, originally, I think the term came up almost 2 years ago now, was very much a concept. But what we did was act on the concept and put together, I keep talking about infrastructure, platform, the core components of our GIS here at FSC. We're using a technology called ArcGIS Hub for the Forest Atlas. That is very much in place. We're using ArcGIS Hub for our forest area submittal tool we're using RTS Hub for our EUDR Risk Hub response. So those core pieces are core pieces of the Forest Atlas. So again, at this point, logging in to submit your forest area, you're not going to see Forest Atlas. You're going to see a very specific tool. Same thing with your EUDR Risk. When you log in to go through that process, it's not going to say Forest Atlas, because right now it's all integrated into our FSC Connect. But in my opinion, not 2025, but likely 2026, we're going to start to concentrate all of these different tools we're putting together. I talked a bit about this idea of Forest FM Online, you know, this new version of the digital audit report. All of this stuff is going to start to concentrate into a Forest Atlas, which will be then be branded as Forest Atlas. But we have to begin with core components first, and that core is in place and we're building on it. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I guess a lot of these plans and concept were also impacted hugely by EUDR and pushing everything aside and saying we need to focus first on getting the Risk Hub out there and getting that public to our certificate holders.
Yes. EUDR has had huge global implications and certainly huge implications within FSC. There's a good and a bad to it. The bad is, yeah, we had to focus on EUDR. The good is, I personally think that while it may seem like it slowed down other things, it really focused us on delivering things and learning about this process of implementing tools that will be used by our certificate holders. That's a big deal from a technology perspective. Again, EUDR was kind of upended a lot of plans, but it has been a powerful catalyst for us to start delivering, us, FSC, start delivering tools to our certificate holders in a way that makes sense. Otherwise, we could have continued postponing things indefinitely. And I'm all about getting things delivered and out in the marketplace.
Yeah, there's nothing like a strong deadline that will make us scramble. And I think it's true that we are really learning now through this process, not only how to speed up development of tools, but also how to operationalize them and put them in place and put proper increased support functions in place and all of that stuff that comes with pushing a business critical product to market.
I completely agree.
So if we look a bit ahead for the next year, can we just imagine it's now New Year's Eve 2025, as you toast with your champagne, I don't even know whether you drink champagne, let's assume that you do, what do you hope to be able to look back on and say, yes, we managed to deliver that?
There's like three or four big things. The first thing is, yes, we got our forest area submittal tool out and people have our forest management certificate holders, we have like 90% of our boundaries uploaded and available. We've got that done. The Risk Hub, I mentioned that I've been leading, is implemented. We've incorporated all of our comments back from our certificate holders. We've gone through several iterations of it by the end of 2025, and it's solid and it's deemed a hugely beneficial and important tool in EUDR compliance. The third big piece is that we have a remote sensing repository. I've mentioned, I think in the past, we've done podcasts on the tech consortium. We've got a variety of partners in there. We want to upload a lot of that remote sensing data that we're getting from some of our partners like Planet or others into that Forest Atlas. We have a landing page for the Forest Atlas in place that will allow our certificate holders to log into the Forest Atlas, look at their boundary, start to assess things like carbon, or you know, I keep saying ecosystem services, will allow them to maybe generate a map or reports on things like risk, on degradation, on roads, on opportunities for ecosystem services. And this is all accessible to our certificate holders out there. If we can get that in place, I think it will have a huge impact as we go into 2026. The last piece of that is that it's my fondest hope by the end of 2025, we have a very active and vocal certificate holder GIS community. So mm-hmm. I mentioned the early adopter program earlier about EUDR. I'm hoping to put together something very similar around the development of GIS within FSC. So they are helping advise on what we do with the data, how they can contribute maybe ground truthing information to help our models better around things like degradation risk or other things. So I'm very hopeful that we can have the beginnings of that advisory group in place, and they are participating and jointly developing the Forest Atlas with FSC.
Those are no small feats. And I keep thinking back to some of the podcasts I've just done, the last couple of ones. Two episodes back, I was interviewing Asger Olesen and Andrek on the EU taxonomy. And I can't help but think that the Forest Atlas would also be a keystone piece for companies, for forest owners trying to adhere to the taxonomy and reporting against the taxonomy for investments and their impact basically on sustainability.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. One of the big things that is being developed, you mentioned Asger. I worked a lot with Asger when he was here at FSC and continue to work with the Ecosystem Services Program. One of the big things that's happening within the Ecosystem Services Program is the development of the Ecosystem Services Registry, which is the registering of all of these projects around carbon or biodiversity or water or whatever. Those are all GIS based. And so that Ecosystem Services Registry will have a huge GIS component. So, and it will likely be integrated in with the Forest Atlas as well. But yeah, the taxonomy, the access to all of those things, the Ecosystem Services Registry, it's all GIS. I see everything. Like I keep talking about, yes, I'm a geographer at heart. Everything we do at FSC relates to a place on the planet. Where are the forests? What kind of trees are in the forest? What's the vegetation? What's the productivity? All of that can be boiled down to the basic aspects of where, what kind of soils, that's all where. Once you have that figured out, your ability to look at your forest a little differently starts to open up.
Oh, it's so interesting. We're running out of time, and I just have one final question for you, Scott. You are talking about getting a sort of like a user panel or getting more actual users involved. If stakeholders out there, if listeners out there thinking, I want to stick my hand up, I want to be part of that. If they want to have access to the certified area submittal tool, all those things, how do they get in touch with you and the team? How do they know when they are able to upload? Like, how do they stay informed as certificate holders?
We already have an alias. You can just email gis@fsc.org. And that's an open channel that you can go to. You can also email me, s.mcqueen@fsc.org. And I'm, again, especially if you have a GIS, I've met a lot of our FM users in my previous life. I worked for Esri and was the commercial forestry account executive. So if you know me, email me and let's start that conversation. I'd certainly want two ends of the extreme in that GIS advisory group. I want our expert GIS users that are out there with our certificate holders. But let's say your community and family forest owner or manager, you should also be reaching out to me, to us, to advise in what sorts of functionality that you need or capabilities you might need. And I'm more than happy to involve you. At the end of the day, that's our fondest hope, is that we are helping a lot of those community and family forest owners participate by giving them access to these tools that allow them to look at their forest a little differently. So I gave you two different things in there. If you have thoughts or ideas, email, and we can start a conversation on that. I'm imagining we'll start formalizing this advisory group by mid to 2025. If you don't hear from me, or you may get an email invite that says, hey, I know you're very vocal about the needs of a certificate holder. Please participate in this. So again, gis@fsc.org, or email me.
Okay. And what about the whole certified area submittal tool? Is that an email that goes out directly to forest management certificate holders?
Every FM certificate holder will be receiving an email, like I said, I'm pretty sure it's the end of this month or very early December, inviting them to participate. Again, at this point, it's not required. It's voluntary, but you will get to start submitting your boundary, your forest boundary at that time. That will be an email that just simply goes out to all of our certificate holders, FM certificate holders. So expect that, if nothing else.
Fantastic, Scott. Thank you very much for indulging me and for giving me an update on all of the exciting stuff. I always leave these conversations in a better mood.
Good. I'm glad you're in a better mood. Thank you, Loa.
That concludes my conversation with Scott on how we are planning to take our use of GIS technologies to the next level. Let's hope that the team's aspirations becomes a reality and that 2025 will be the year where we truly unlock the power of GIS and placing everything in our map. Both so that we internally get much more data and can become more data-driven, but also so that our certificate holders can have easier access to key information like biodiversity or carbon or degradation, and much easier access to reporting on key legislations like the European Deforestation Regulation. Remember to subscribe to Forest of the Future to get notified of new episodes where we dive into other innovations within FSC and the world of sustainability, sustainable forest management, and certification. You can also always get in touch with me on podcast@fsc.org. I am Laura Worm, and this was Forest for the Future.